approached, and his childhood, telling us how his mother did some of her house work jobs. Okay, Eddie, you've got 5 sisters, 5 brothers, and your mama did the laundry by hand.
That's right. It was all done by hand.
How old were you kids when she finally got a washing machine?
Well, I wouldn't know. I don't know. I'd have been up in the 20s.
Did she still have plenty at home?
Yeah.
Kids at home?
Yeah.
Where were you in the family? Middle?
I was the oldest one.
Oldest?
I was the oldest one.
Okay.
And the one next to me was my sister Irene, who's passed away. She passed away.
Okay. Now, when your mother went to cook, how would she go about getting the meal together? Was it canned? Was it garden? Was it?
It was garden, and you'd cut the ham off the shoulders and cook beans.
Did you fix your own ham? Did you?
Yeah, we did our own bush.
Oh, we didn't have to do it out.
Own bush. Now, we didn't, never did kill any cattle, but we always killed hogs. We always had pork, made sausage, all of that stuff.
Why was that? Your family didn't like beef, or why did you?
It just wasn't a practical thing to do, I guess. I don't know. It never was done back in the days.
Like it's too big. It's too big.
They were too big to
keep
handle.
That long.
Well, you couldn't keep them either. See,
if you keep it that long. See, now we can keep them in the freezer.
Pork, you can put salt head down, put it in brine, and
smoke it.
Smoke it,
put it in lard, sausage in lard.
And we always had sauerkraut in the basement, made out of cabbage in the wintertime, or in the summertime.
And sauerkraut, pickles, onions, and apples.
Canned fruit, always canned all summer long, whatever come along.
How did she can? She didn't have a pressure cooker?
No.
10 cans with ceiling wax.
Right, with ceiling wax around the top of the can, ceiling wax.
That, or in a glass can.
A glass
can? Yeah.
Did she have a cold pack, or how?
They
had
to boil
it.
In a boiler.
They used a wash boiler. The old copper wash boiler.
Right.
Yeah. And it had a, I didn't pay too much attention for that.
I think that's the way they did it, though.
That's how
they
do it.
Well, they cook it real good and then pour it in there, because mom had some thing like that set on top of the can so it wouldn't run over.
Did you
blackberries would go clear in Kentucky 5 miles and carry them home?
We used to raise our beans. We'd raise navy beans on the farm, and in the wintertime we'd tromp them out on the floor, and then we'd finally get down to where the beans was. That was part of the thing, that instead of watching TV, we'd clean out beans on certain nights a week, so we'd have beans for to eat.
Clean the hell off of them.
Yeah, I remember cleaning beans.
You made everything and done everything yourself. That was
you had
thing.
To do it.
That's the reason you didn't have the time.
And you did do it.
And the women, every time they sat down, they were darning or repairing something. In the evening, that's when they fixed the clothes.
How about, like, if you went to the grocery store, then what would you be apt to buy? Were you buying, like, flour, coffee?
You'd buy your flour, you'd buy your coffee. Your coffee would be in beans, and you had a grinder that you would grind the coffee. You'd buy flour, and you'd buy pepper and salt. But the rest, you never bought bread there. You made your own bread for biscuits. Cornbread. There would be nothing that you'd buy in cans.
Wouldn't be that much more than that you'd buy. Box of matches.
Yeah, box of old kitchen matches. Like firewood. Would be very particular with them too, so they'd last a long time.
Whenever there's a fire and you're going to light the lamp, you use a paper lighter to light the lamp, so you didn't use a match.
What's a paper ladder?
Rolling up a paper.
you'd use a certain roebuck out from the outhouse. I guess you're familiar with that.
That's kind of dangerous, though, wasn't it?
Did you really, or is that just the saying?
No, that's the truth.
I don't know how long toilet paper's been on the market.
I don't know either. Sears Roebuck catalogs were a thinner paper than what newspaper are. They would work better, shall we say.
And they were free, right?
Yeah, they were free.
Did everybody get a Sears Roebuck catalog?
Practically everybody. Not anybody bought it. Any amount of anything probably got it.
I couldn't say about that.
Now you have to buy so much before you get one.
What would you be apt to buy from Sears and Roebuck?
Materials. Maybe shoes. Overshoes.
For them big, gum boots. Remember they come up here? And felt boots, that's what I'm trying to say.
Felt boots with a little rubber on
rubber down there and then
those things are terrible.
I've got a rocking chair out there on the front porch that I got for Christmas when I was 3 or 4 years old. And I just imagine it came from Sears, I'm not sure.
You had rural mail carriers, right?
Yeah.
The mail would come in.
Yeah.
How far did you have to go to, say, a grocery store?
Well, you only went to grocery store once a month.
Was it nearby, or was it a trip?
Well, I lived in Guilford. There was probably a grocery store in Guilford. And when I've gone one there, we probably went down to Homestead. There was Maroff had a grocery store there. I know we went there.
How about haircuts? Did you go to the barber?
No,
no. Ah, that's an interesting thing.
What was 15 cents?
Yeah,
what?
When Gallagher Arthur cut it, it was only a nickel on the back porch.
He cut my hair on the back porch. Like overlooking the river. They had their home on Decatur Street, and they had a great big long porch on the back. And Gallagher Arthur, he cut hair on Saturday.
On Saturday. Only Saturday only. Work someplace else.
Yeah, and you go down there, and you cut your hair, and you look at the river.
Harry Arthur.
How come they ever call him Gallagher?
I don't know.
Harry Arthur. Sorry.
How about you, Daddy? Did your dad cut yours?
Well, Dad and Mom did. Dad and Mom. So, Eddie Wise cut mine was... When I first got the first barbershop I went to, was Eddie Wise.
And Jess Miller, he either cut for a quarter or 15 cents. What was it, Jess Miller? You remember him?
Yeah, I remember, but I don't know what he paid for. The first barber cut my hair was Bob Nittenberg's barber.
Al Nittenberg. Albert Nittenberg.
I had long curls when he cut it. They saved those curls that had handkerchief boxes that used to have hanging about the table like a house. Put all the ugly curls in and everything there for 50 years or better.
And your bath, bath once a week. That was on Saturday night. If there was 3 or 4 kids in the family, you all used the same bath water. Whoever got there first got clean water, and the rest of them got gone.
We never did that, Ed.
We didn't do that.
Huh?
No. We always used this tub, but we changed the water.
We didn't have 10 kids at the family.
No, they don't.
You didn't have, maybe you didn't have, yeah, I guess you had to carry the water in.
Yeah, we had to carry the water. Yeah, but we didn't have to tell them.
All right.
Get ready.
Our water was right outside the kitchen door there. That is when we lived here.
Did you get hot water?
Heated up on the stove.
Heated it on the stove.
Right.
Yeah. Tea kettle on the stove.
We never had no hot water.
We didn't have running water for years.
And Mom and Dad did. They had water.
We didn't have running water for years. We didn't have electricity for years.
Well, we didn't have electric here after I bought the place in 33.
Did you go to bed awfully early without electric, or what did you do?
These coal lamps.
Man, I'm going to tell you another thing. Families used to get together a little bit more, too.
You sit around.
Your neighbor may come over and sit on the front porch. You may not, of course, you can't tell. Well, they didn't stay up too late. But and then across the back fence. You know, they did a lot of talking across the back fence.
If anybody in the neighborhood was sick, everybody was there to see what they could do. You never had to worry about anything, because if you needed anything, they'd get it somewhere. That's one thing that you don't get now. You don't hardly, the people sit next door to you, don't hardly talk to you.
Yeah, they can go right out the door and never see it.
Gladys Holmes is in the hospital, lives in a house I own in the hospital for 4 or 5 days, wherever she's going. She lives in the house right next door to me, and in the house upstairs I own. Now Doug Ward's wife, mother's in there. I knew she was when she went. I never realized.
Well, and your parents died real young.
My father lived.
Your father?
Yeah. My mother died when I was 15 months old. My father lived until...
Not too long ago, was it, Ames?
He was married second time, 52 years, in second life.
What happened to your mother that she died so young?
Well, they thought it was, what is it, crippled, yeah.
Arthritis?
No. Spinalangitis or something like that. I had a cracked foot all twisted around when I was a youngster. And the last time I went to a specialist to see if I could get anything done for it. He said it had to be that instead of a club foot. It had to be spinalangitis or something. So she had that during pregnancy and then so took care of her.
What, how, like your parents, Ralph, how old did they?
Oh boy, my mother lived to be 90. She just died this year. Yeah, she died, yeah. And my daddy lived about 78.
The lifespan was just as long then without the medical care. Yeah. Life squads was what I was thinking of.
Yeah, my mother lived to be 90 years old. 90 years old.
Mm-hmm. How about your parents, Daddy? Did they?
Mother died 53 after year 55. And I don't remember how old she was. Daddy lived to be 91 years old. He died 5 or 6 years ago.
You didn't have a hospital in the county then, did you?
No.
I had to go to Cincinnati. Yeah.
Back when I was driving for Johnny Steer, I went to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
How long ago that was.
Where did you go to school in?
Well, I started in Greendale School, and I went to a little one-room school up on 48, and I went to a one-room school out at Lena, Indiana, that's close to Brazil, Indiana, and then I went to Greentown, and that was more or less a consolidated school. I mean, there was all the grades were all in one big school out there. And then I come into Aurora, and I went to one-room school up here on Lockery, and then I went to Lutheran school 1 year here in Aurora, and then I went to Northside school, and I went to Northside school in 7, 8, in the first year of high. And that made me 16 years old, and Dad said, "Well, son," he said, "we need you on the farm." He said, "Maybe later on you can go to the Richmond Business College," which was down in Aurora here, up over Stall Meat Market. But I never stood there. You remember that?
I remember Richmond. Mm-hmm. What was his first name?
Reuben.
Reuben, that's right. No, I don't remember the school, no.
Yeah, the school up over...
I heard about it. I'm sure Mother talked about that.
I remember the school.
What did you do then when you got out of school? You went to work for your dad?
Well, I worked for Dad for a while, and then I left home and went up, stayed up in Norwood about 6 months, worked at different places up there, card plant, U.S. Rumbler. I worked for Barney Kroger, B.H. Kroger, for 2 weeks. I've never been to Kroger store since.
That was the original Kroger that started the Krogers?
The original.
What was he like?
Well, I never met Barney. I never did meet him. But, at that time, he was putting a store on every little corner that he could put all around Cincinnati. That was the beginning of the Kroger Company. Mm-hmm. And I had to go back in the morning when I'd go to work. I'd come back here in the back room and cut all the rotten off of the lettuce and all the cabbage and all that stuff. And I just didn't like it. I worked here 2 weeks and I told him, I said, "I don't like this job." What I got paid, I don't remember. So I left there and went to Goodrich Rubber Company. And when I ended up, I was working at the U.S. Card Plant.
How long did you work there? Off the farm?
So Well, then I come back home, and me and Dad couldn't see eye to eye, so I went and lived with an aunt and uncle over in Greendale. And I got a job at a horseshoe factory up where the Gulf Refining is at now. At 25 cents an hour, and you work 12 hours a night, 6 to 6, and they give you half an hour off to eat lunch at midnight. And I worked there 3 days, and in the daytime, that's when they were building the power plant over there, and in the daytime, my aunt would take me over to the power plant, see if they could be any help. So, after the third day, I got a job over there on the cement gang, finishing walls.
You moved around. I worked in Batesville.
I worked there then until the plant was finished, and they wanted me to go on the inside, and I couldn't see going in. So I left there. And then I come down and worked for A.D. Cook Company, pump company in Greendale, which was within a block of where my aunt lived. That 5-minute whistle used to blow, and I'd jump out of bed.
You gotta go to bed, man.
Run across the street, get there in time to punch the time clock. 7 o'clock.
You should have gone to bed at night. You've been all right.
I worked there for 2 years, and finally, Mr. O'Brien come to me, and me and another fella, he was a buddy of mine, he lived in the next house to me, and come to us. We were the last two men he hired. He said, boys, things are slowing down a little bit. And he said, I believe you fellas go. At that time, we were getting 40 cents an hour.
That was Cornelius O'Brien.
That was good. That was good.
It was real good pay.
But
when I was up there,
I went in Columbia Power up there at 40 cents an hour. And my first paycheck was 45. And I counted the hours up, and it didn't come out right. So I went to the boss, Jim, and I said, I think something's wrong here. No, he said, I just gave you a raise. He said, you're a good worker. But I was raised on a farm, and I didn't do what the other fellows were doing. They didn't work. But I...
Now you can't find anybody to work.
I know. It's pretty hard. So, and after Mr. O'Brien left me go, I come home and help Dad put out the crap. That was in April, and in June, I said to Dad one day, I said, what are you going to do with them milk bottles up there in the barn, Dad? Well, Dad had run a milk route here. He'd run a dairy here in town, just raw milk, see. He said, why, what do you got in mind? I hunted every place for a job, and you couldn't find one. You couldn't buy one. 27. Well, I said, I just kind of think maybe I'd sell some milk. Well, he said, where are you going to buy it at? I said, well, over at Witte's. They had a reputation of having good Jersey milk. They had good milk. Well, he said, you might try it. So I tried it, and that was the beginning of it. Started June 20th. Went out here with 20 pints of milk in a case. Went over and filled 20 pints, raw milk. Went over into Lawrenceburg and sold 20 pints of milk. Had a nickel a bottle. I had 20 customers that first day. Come back the next day with a little bit more, and from that day on.
1927.
So.
It was Probst milk or Probst dairy?
Probst. Mother's only rival. Probst milk company. Is.
Right, that's what you had on the side of the truck. Probst milk company.
Yeah, Probst.
Did you raise your own cattle and stuff, or did you always just...
Yeah, then... I run this, then finally I rented a room down in town, and I bought out a lady that had, Townsend West used to come down here since then, and they delivered milk in here. They had a crooked driver. He got in trouble. And so Townsend West decided this was too far to come with their trucks. So they sold it to some lady that was hauling milk into their plant from farmers around here, see. And she ran it. And she got tired of it, and I bought her end of it out. Well, things just come along. I mean, I never knew there was depression. Never did hit me. So a few years later on, well, Dad and Mom, in the meantime, they had split up. After having 11 kids, they decided The last two was twins. They decided they wasn't suited for each other, so they split up. Well, this farm was for sale. So I bought this farm with $200. I gave Dad $200, borrowed the rest of the money. Dad took second mortgage on it.
Were you married at that time yet?
No, no. Oh, no. No. No, I was going.
Well, tell me about your courtship then.
Well, I was going with my wife, and any other girl would go with me.
Where did you take her when you go with her?
Church, well, mostly.
One of the favorite places was Johnny Overdeen's barbecue up in, up on Old 50.
They had good barbecues up there.
I'd love anything to get that recipe. She won't give it to nobody. Mm-hmm. You know that?
I wouldn't doubt that a bit.
No, she won't.
They were delicious.
Stalls is crazy too. The mess that they made all the time, nobody's got that recipe.
How about their liverwurst?
Nobody's got it.
Well, they wouldn't give it.
You never ate anything like that.
But anyhow, died. The guy that had it died with it. That's dumb.
Yeah. Tell you about they used to give a liverwurst that big around
for a nickel.
Just like that big around for a nickel.
Are they made here?
They made them right
there.
Right
there.
And boy, they were delicious.
They shipped that meat all over the world.
What was the name of it?
Stall Meat Company.
You ever been in Mary's grocery store over here? Did you ever notice that little girl in a with a meat market? You ever see that on
the
wall?
There's a picture up there on the wall.
I've seen the pictures, but I can't.
Well,
that's
Stall's Meat Market.
That was the inside of it.
There's going to be a meat market now.
Is that what's happening in there?
And the one girl, the girl that's in the picture.
Phyllis Funk.
Huh?
Phyllis Funk.
She's in the bank down here.
Oh. She's vice president of the bank.
Yeah. Well, that's Phyllis's picture there.
There'll never be another barbershop. I mean,
Oh, and then then of course we had homebrew camps up on the Miami River. Homebrew camps up on Miami River.
Yeah, they sure did. They sure did.
We'd go up there and you'd get a tin cup. It was about that big around and have a handle on each side to get that full of
homebrew.
Beer. Homebrew.
Yeah.
For what? How much?
I don't know. There was that.
I was working selling. I don't
know. I used to go up there.
A lot of families made homebrew, man.
Yeah.
They made homebrew. And
what was homebrew? Was it more like beer? Or
Braided beer.
It is beer.
Yeah.
Homemade beer.
Down in Kentucky, it was whiskey.
Yeah.
Well, this was permissible. It was permissible. It was put into law.
Yeah. Yeah. I was sleeping in the after I bought this house here, this farm. Well, I lived here a long time by myself. Red Orm and I made a batch of homebrew here one time. We put it down in the basement there, and I slept up there where I'm sleeping at now. I woke up during the night. Bang! Hit the ceiling. blowing up. We've made it too strong. Oh, I tell you.
This was legal. It was all right to do.
It wasn't legal. Now, wait a minute.
Homebrew?
It wasn't legal.
Oh, no. Now you weren't supposed to sell it.
They'd make the raids up there on the Miami.
Oh, yeah.
On the Miami River. This was, you go up to E-Town. And then you go like you're going over to Harrison.
And all those camps on the right-hand side.
They have camps down in there. And
you didn't have to go that far. You go right out this road.
Oh, yeah, you could. We had one right out the road here. Next house up the road. Conaway. Yeah. He made homebrew and sold it there.
What'd you make it with?
We'd buy the grocery store. You'd buy the ingredients in the grocery store.
Malt. Get your caps? Caps? You mean get the caps? The
capper? Yeah, cappers and bottles. Those fellas, you know, that used to stop down at the clothing store when I was used to. They'd call ahead. The fellas that would come around through here selling stocks, and bonds, and stuff like that. They all stopped down at the store. And they'd call ahead and they'd want a big dinner and stuff like that. And I'd call an old lady out here and she'd put on a big dinner. I bet those guys spent more money out there than anybody in the country. They'd come out there and have their big dinners and drink homebrew on it.
He had, what's his name, Conaway over on Lord Ellsberg, too. He ran a good joint over there.
I didn't know, but I heard about it.
When did you finally get Mrs. Probst to propose?
1936. Okay. And I went with her all the years.
How many children do you have, Annie?
I have three children. of her own two boys.
What are their names?
The girl is Martinsville. She's the oldest. And Butch, he's a little one. He lives in Columbus. And Rick, he's in Korea.
Butch is a doctor, isn't it?
Yeah. Butch is a dermatologist.
What does Rick do in Korea?
He's in service.
Service.
Army.
Yeah. What's your daughter's name?
Helen Jane. Yeah, I talked to her this morning. Our family reunion will be Sunday, and she's a secretary.
You better come up with it, huh?
Yeah.
Get it all straightened out.
Did you serve in the military?
No military service. Just sweat was all. For about, I think I went on for about 2 years that I was pretty close there.
It took me now.
I know my dad, he'd have been in the next draft if they'd have had another draft in World War I. He was sweating too. But it just happened that we were just old enough that we were about it. So.
In the wrong period. I was too. I had to go down, but they didn't keep me.
What were you, about 35 when World War II started?
Well, I don't know, figure it out.
37.
1905 to
1942, 41, 41? I'm not 37 years old. I was 37 years old. I was 37 years old.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So you missed it because of your age.
That's right.
Yeah,
yeah.
And what do you remember about World War II then? You all lived through that era. Was it frightening here, or did we know what was going on?
Well, there's one thing that's always that I've always remembered. We moved in here in March of 1918, and we moved down on Lockery Creek, down where Harry Richards farmed. And Dad and I were out putting up hay in the back on the hillside, and we heard the awfulest noise. And Dad said, "Boy," he said, "there's somebody up over that hill, sure gunning an automobile awful bad." And all of a sudden, here come a little airplane over the hill. Somebody was flying over the hill. Now that had nothing to do with World War I, but I mean that was the first airplane I ever saw come flying over that hill. And then on World War I, there was two times that they had one time they had a false alarm. They blowed the whistles, and we lived close enough to town that we could hear all the bells and the whistles. See, at that time factories all had whistles on. And when they're in trouble, well, they blow the whistle. Instead of, like now, we blow a siren, see? And we heard all that. Well, I don't know whether we had telephone or not. Anyhow, we had no way of knowing what was going on, but we was scared, because we thought, well, the Germans had come over.
That was World War I?
That was World War I. World War II, I can tell you a lot about that, I guess.
You were from a German family, Eddie. How'd they feel, particularly World War I? Did you still know any of your relatives in Germany, or how'd your parents?
No, we wouldn't have known them. No. I don't know. Now, World War I in Germany, the Lutheran school here, or Lutheran church, they used to have service in German and English. Well, in World War I, that was eliminated. They cut it completely out. I know that. But World War... you had to have gas stamps to get your gas. We made chocolate milk, and you had to buy chocolate syrup. we had a fellow that was our salesman. He was from Dayton, Ohio. And I called him up one day, and I said, "I'm awful low on chocolate syrup." I said, "What can you do for me?" Well, you just had to try to get it any way that you could.
always end up. We're operating.
Most individual people didn't have any reason to have more. They got trouble. They end up getting to go around. No way.
Yeah.
My mother and dad and my brother, they ran out of meat. They didn't have any more. And of course, in those days, you still had a sketch down in the river. And the river was up, and my brother, he'd go over and look at the boat. He had to look at it twice a day. And here he goes down the range, you know, and the barge boat. And he's got a bit of the boat out. And you don't believe, man, but there's that big old fish went right up and jumped right in his boat. Man, jumped right in that boat. And let me tell you something. You couldn't make believe the good Lord didn't spy that fly him with that thing. I tell you, he did it, man. And this is true. And they took the fish home and they had
that
fish. They sure did.
We had watermelon rind and butter.
Yeah.
And that was our fruit.
Tires with leather. Now you had racing tires.
Different bakery, what?
A dollar.
A little bit of baked bread.
Right down on the little front.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. And you bring your, back in them days, bread wouldn't hold up like it does now. But they'd go out, the drivers go to the store every day, and then pick up whatever you had left. Rolls and all that sort of stuff. We used to get that stuff. And Dad would go down and get a big drum of it. Boy, listen, we got that. That was goodie. We sailed to sell, but and sour and like that.
I know.
We never did go away.
hungry, but I can tell you people in this town that the kids went to school and were hungry. And that ain't been, well, no, it's been some time back, but their parents just didn't provide for them.
Yeah. When the cabbage is in, he made this sauerkraut. And everything, pickles and everything, and canned everything. And when I was a kid, we used to carry blackberries for 5 miles in Kentucky down to the river. And then go home and help Mom can them.
Yeah.
We had everything in the basement.
How many would go on the blackberry hunts? Was that a whole family thing?
No, just a couple of us. Mom Marshall and I went. That is, our family. But there's other families went together. That's when John Peters had the boat and was going down the river. And the fella had a big boat, and there'd be maybe 8 or 10 of us to go. But my God, carry five. It would have been so bad if it was a regular lard can, but it was one of those Crisco jobs that was long. And I was short. I had to hold it up like this.
Did you get chiggers?
Not in Kentucky.
Not in Kentucky.
I had to get them here, though.
You mean there's no jigger?
I never got a jigger in my life in Kentucky.
Is that right? I mean, that's
the jiggers would eat me up on it.
Now tell me what you remember about the river. I want to know about the 37 flood, the other things too, about the people that lived down there.
Well, how about when the river froze over and seeing the people walk across it?
Okay.
I saw that.
I saw that.
I never did do it.
I did.
You probably did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Well, they tell me that they drove Model T Fords across.
Well, it could be, but we never did that.
I don't ever see how I could ever done that, Ed, because wherever it was smooth enough to do that, it wasn't thick enough. The rest of it was all broke up.
Yeah.
And you could walk it, but I never did walk it.
First time I ever walked across the Ohio River was 1948. I mean, I walked across the river in 1948. Now, she was froze over, I think, in, I'm not too sure, but what was it, 33, I do believe. It was froze over because a lot of people went skating down there.
When did they take that lower side of the Decatur Street?
Well, yes. Well, that's been since then. You mean the last big ice they had? I don't know how many years ago that's been. They really don't.
That old Tom Hart place across the street went.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's going back. Now, you're going back in the... Well, oh, yeah.
That's 1780.
Right. Well. See, the Ohio River froze up, man, from Sugar Creek. In Kentucky, and it froze up clear and backed up and it jammed a river down there, see. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there used to be a bottling house down there. See, an old brewery. There used to be an old brewery here. Mm-hmm. And the old brewery had a bottling house across the street. Well, that bottling house, it collapsed that house. You know what I mean?
Down on Decatur Street.
Right there where that park is.
Where
down
the
there,
park
right?
is now. The
park is there with the bottling house. There,
the ice collapsed.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Particularly when the water went out. See, finally that thing broke. See that it went out with them. And I got pictures of that ice, you mean, in front of the wooden shoe down there.
Well, they said it went down 2nd Street so fast you could.
I was on 2nd Street when it happened.
You couldn't follow it.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't around here at that time.
I was on 2nd Street when it happened.
What happened then?
The ice just stayed there. The water dropped so fast, but in the middle it was dropping so fast and it went on down. She broke loose, dropped down.
Oh, yeah, a lot of
people. The whole lower end of the town was going.
See, in 13, there were no dams across the river at that time. Them dams were built in 24.
The whole canalization of the Ohio River in 1928. That's when everything was done. You mean the whole, yeah. the whole river?
Well, I think they opened.
I used to remember. Ralph, maybe you remember how much what the footage was in all these buildings on 2nd Street. Mm-hmm. Come on, I used to remember that.
Well, I tell you, down there in Bob Johnson's store when I worked down there for Bobby, it was about
64 feet.
Yeah. 64 feet apart.
You know what? The lower weld is the same. One square down. Same thing.
Now, how deep do you think the river was at Aurora then?
I don't know. I wouldn't have any idea. The 37 flood, when 37 flooded,
82 feet.
82 feet.
Yeah. And right now, man, we got about a 27 foot river right now.
Yeah.
About 27 foot.
It used to be, what was that, 20,
You mean the river?
Before they put in the bed.
Oh, no, about 13 feet.
Huh?
About 13 feet.
13. Now, can you imagine a bar over on the other side of the river and people going over there swimming?
About 100.
Sandbar and...
Beautiful.
Pretty. Clear water.
Just the great big bar, that whole thing, all except the upper part of that thing was gravel. But I mean, when you got about the middle of it, from then on down, just nothing but sand.
I know they used to have trouble with the boats getting hung up on sandbars around Loffrey somewhere.
Well, yeah, that was on a big boulder bar
down.
What's above the island? Right there, right across from Loffrey Creek, yes. Man, you might talk about this just a little bit. When I was a kid on the river, and I've been on the river my whole life, they used to have these great big towboats come down the river. And they were all sternwheelers, all sternwheel with wood barges, And they was loaded. Those towboats, they only had about that much water. In other words, their freeboard on them. Well, sometimes water come up on the deck. You mean they was that far down in the water? You mean there wasn't much for the boat out. Well, anyway, the biggest, and a lot of them lovely old boats, and they were dandies. The Monongahela, the NEC Archer Jr., City of Pittsburgh. Well, another thing, you take your big boats that goes around the river today, you mean like to go down around this bend down here at Aurora, they go around that bend now under power. In other words, they keep them things going and they go around under power. In those days, they couldn't do that. They had to come down into the bend and then they'd start backing that boat up. They'd back her up and back her up and back her up. And what they're doing is flanking the bow out into the main part of the river, out into the channel, see? And once they got her straightened up, and then you hear the old bell. Nothing. The captain didn't regulate that boat. He rang a bell. Then the guy downstairs, he'd full speed ahead or whatever he wanted. He'd ring the bell, and he'd hear that old bell ringing. He'd see the old wheel start, man, go.
And fools like us would go out and get behind and get the first wave off of it.
Oh yes.
The boat in your old boat trip. Oh yeah. 16-foot waves.
We used to do that all the time. Yeah.
Now what we lost in the 13 flood though was all these nice old steamers.
Oh yeah, hundreds of them.
All up and down the river.
Yeah.
How did you lose them?
Ice storm pieces.
I crushed them.
Storm pieces.
Come in and just crush them. See, they were all wooden.
Yeah.
And all stern wheelers. That had a paddle wheel on the back. And
the side wheelers too, the pasture boats were.
Yeah.
Pasture boats were.
Low.
I tell you another thing they used to have, ma'am, on the river. They had what they call meet the boat trip. They had a boat was coming from Louisville, Kentucky, and one going from Cincinnati, and on a Sunday, they would meet at Madison, Indiana. So people could get on the boat in Cincinnati and ride to Madison and transfer over on the other boat and come back home the same day.
I've done it.
Yeah, that was really.
I was going to say, did you ever ride
the boat? Oh, yes.
And then we used to have a wharf boat down there in the second.
Right. Right behind the, that the restaurant down there.
A boat would stop there and they'd unload everything and come to this competition. Boy, they'd push those colored folks, I'm telling you, they really worked.
And I tell you another thing, they used to do, people get up on the front end of the boat, you know, and then throw nickels and dimes down there, those colored people down there. And you never saw people ever fight for money. My God, they'd really have a heck of a time, I tell you they would. No kidding, they did. This is true.
You go down and see the boat come in, that's something else we'd do, see.
Yeah.
I tell you another thing, one day I was out in the river all by myself on the skiff, and her towboat come up through. It had one barge on her. And her first thing you know, I seen some guy out on that barge jumping up and down, waving his hands. And I thought, well, first thing you know, the wheel started working, and the first thing I thought it was Clarence Zernoff. Clarence lived right next door to us, and he worked on the Ohio River for the government. And here, first thing you know, here was Clarence. I could see it was Clarence. See? And he was jumping up and he said, come and get me. He hollered at me, come and get me. Well, glory be, I had never taken anybody off a towboat in my life. Well, so I rode the old skiff over there and I had a chain on the boat. And threw Clarence a chain and he caught it. And Clarence caught the chain. But Clarence couldn't hold it. You mean he couldn't hold me? You know what I mean? Well, for that, so Clarence still didn't give up. And the towboat captain, he didn't slow her down a bit. Man, he just kept right on going. Now those things don't look like they're going very fast, but you try to catch one of them someday.
When you're out on the water.
Yeah, you just try to catch one of them someday. Well, anyway, I pulled the old chain back up in the boat and got in position again. Well, by that time, there was two or three other guys running out there with Clarence. You know what I mean? And this time, they caught me. Well, when they stopped me, I was right by the back of the paddle wheel by then. Well, it didn't bother me any. You know, you may not screw back to the paddle wheel, so I just took hold of that old boat and kept that old skiff waving my paddle wheel, see? Those guys pulled me back up farther on the towboat.
That's a good kind of answer, sir.
Oh, you know what? You know what? Let me tell you a little story. See, that's what I say. My mother, it's a wonder she lived. And my mom had to be sitting right on the front porch. You know what I mean?
She saw that.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. This is true. You know, you mean, and I tell you, it's a wonder the poor thing ever lived. Well, anyway, I got old Clarence off the towboat, brought him ashore and took him off. I'll tell you one more little illustration and I'll quit. Tommy Owens. That was back in the day of the tippy canoes. There was a fad one time when we built over the tippy canoe, and they were just a little boat about that wide, about 2 feet wide, and they were 8 feet long. And you made them out of barrel hoops and wood. Barrel hoops and wood, and you put a gallon can each end to give it a little buoyancy, so in case you sink the thing, it might float. Well, Tommy Owens and I, and we was riding the waves behind the Queen City. Now, the Queen City was a very palatial boat on the inside, ma'am. You mean her decor on the inside of that boat was one of the most beautiful boats on the river, the Queen City was. Well, we was taking these boat waves behind the Queen City, and she made a real good wave, just like what Hank said. Oh, boy, I tell you. Well, anyway, I was riding in the waves. I got in the waves, you know what I mean? I got through the shore waves. I got through them, okay, into the big waves. See? And I just sitting there riding them old waves, you know what I mean, sidewise in the boats. See? Well, Tommy, he come over that wave endwise. You know what I mean? He had his tippy canoe. And here he come over the end, endways. You know what I mean? Here I was sitting right here, and he come over that end, right inside of me. You mean? And of course, naturally, he took me. I got in the water. That's for sure. No other way. Well, my daddy always told me. He said, "Now, Ralph, if you get in trouble, stay with your boat. If you get in trouble, stay with your boat." Well, so here I had a gallon can and a turpentine can one end, a gallon can the other end. Had a little wood in that thing. It was just a little bit buoyancy. A little buoyancy to it, see? And so I just pulled myself back up in that old sunken boat, and I kept my head out of the water, and I paddled it ashore. Yes, I did. Paddled that old thing back to shore. And again, this time, my mom and dad both was on the front porch. You know what I mean?
Heard about it.
Huh? Well, I tell you, they finally got so they could handle it, okay? I mean, they had to, man, because there's no other way.
You just wonder why you're still alive today.
Oh, my goodness.
The good Lord was sure looking after you. Mm-hmm. I've had many, many experiences the same way.
Well, if he wasn't looking after you, he wouldn't have.
One more thing, we traced the trot line out there one night, and that was back in the days when the packet boats were still running.
What's a trot line?
Fishing line.
Fishing line.
The line with the weight on this end,
We had an up and down line.
And you had hooks hanging straight down from it, and you let it down onto the bottom. And you have a long piece of cord coming up to the to a buoy up on top, and that's how you have 20, 30 hooks on sometimes.
100?
Well,
yeah,
a little one.
Yeah, a little one, yeah.
And you go out there and pull up this buoy and get your trot line.
Yeah.
Fish on.
You just left it out there all the time?
Oh, yeah. Well, you didn't leave it too. Whenever you're done fishing, I mean, if you took it home, you might leave it there for a week, you mean, or... It depends on how long
you want to fish it every day.
Oh, yeah. Two or three times.
Maybe two.
Well, anyway, this particular night we was out there, and we was pretty well up the river there, you mean, on the bar, you mean, just right below the ferry boat. And we had a lantern. We had the lantern sitting down the bottom of the boat. Wasn't doing much good. And you know, that darn old packet boat come down that river, and we never did hear that thing. Boy, the wind was going upstream, you know, just a little bit, and you couldn't hear that boat. And that thing, your port and your starboard lights are up high. They're not on a natural view. You mean they're up high, up on top of them stacks. Well, the first thing you know, we heard the hiss of the motor. You mean you hear that thing? And the wind, we had an upstream wind that night. So I had the oars, you mean, keep the boat straightened around so you trace. And so I had to have a hold of the oars. I heard that noise, and I looked up, and my eyes fell on them red light and green lights. And my brother was tracing. I said, "Gene, drop that line." So he dropped her, and he didn't even move. He sat right down in front of that boat, boy. And man, I rode that thing Kentucky, man. I got right out there. Boy, I tell you, that was frightening. That
was cold.
That was frightening.
What did you do with the fish when you catch that many times? Did you have some way to preserve them?
Well, that's where you'd have a fish box in the river. And you just leave them in the box and have your box tied to the land and anchored out, and your fish are living in the same surrounding waters, in the river.
And if you want some fish, why you go out there and lift up your dry trap, you know, and get yourself a fish out.
Like each family had one?
Whoever was fishing, man, yeah. I think, you see another thing on Decatur Street, there was practically everybody had a boat. Practically everybody.
They was all anchored out.
All anchored out. They all took good care of their boat. You mean it was really something. Another thing, you know what they used to do, man? I remember Gallagher Arthur's sister, what was his name?
Agnes
Arthur, well. And they had that little boy, Carly, and they used to put that little boat on the back end, and they'd get all, cleaned up. They was cleaned up for the evening. Go down there, take a little boat, row it uptown, and put that little boy on the back seat, and have an outing. I mean, on the river, this is true. A lot of people did that. Hughes.
Yeah, Jack.
Jack Hughes, he'd do that. He'd go out and take a boat ride in the evening. He'd just go get their oars out and take a little boat ride. Maybe go over to the bar. You could go over to the bar anytime and have a picnic over there.
Oh, yeah.
That was always a great place to go.
Build a fire.
Oh, you could be bonfire over there all night long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you'd go up in the farmer's garden and
get a watermelon and
swipe a watermelon.
I've done that
one time.
So did I. And that star coming too.
That was the only time. Well, I was scared.
Oh, yeah. Now, talk about the river. I'm talking about the big tow boats now. Well, then, see, they were primarily stern wheels. But then the first screw wheel boats that was on the river was the Cosmos, Cosmarter, and King's Landing. And they were tow boats owned by the Portland Cement Company. They were the first screw wheel boats. Now, the first big screw wheel boat I ever saw, the line that had those was the Mississippi Valley Barge Line Company. And they owned the Louisiana, the New Orleans, the Indiana, and the Ohio. And they were all big ones, man. These were all big boats like they are today. And that was, now incidentally, I ran into Louisiana a couple years ago, and she's still in operation. And I called a guy on my marine radio, I called him, and asked him if that was the original Louisiana. And majority, it was. And I seen her go by last year. And incidentally, there was a guy down below Rising Sun, a pilot's boat, I can't think of his name right now, but I think he worked on her too. We used to have Cap Chandler used to be here in Aurora, and he was head of the U.S. Corps of Engineers in Cincinnati. He was
I've heard of his name.
Yeah, Cap Chandler. Right. And he was at...
lived right there on 4th Street.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right there... well, two doors from the Catholic Church, yeah. going down towards the river.
Yeah.
But he was a captain on the Sprague. Now the Sprague handled the biggest tow that's ever been handled on a river, the towboat Sprague. And he was also a captain on the Sprague.
What they do when they got to like Louisville, when there falls or something?
They have Alpine Dam or McAlpin? What is it? The locks and dams. They drop you about. Ma'am, I think they drop you about, it's a pretty good drop down. I've been through that already.
They had that already though when you were young.
Oh yeah, that one was, yeah. Oh yeah.
That's been there
for many, many years.
Yeah. That's always been a bottleneck there. You know the Belle of Louisville?
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with it.
Uh-huh.
I was locked up. I towed the brig on that boat one night.
She used to be doing Avalon, didn't she?
Huh?
Yeah.
Then it was the Avalon first. What was the next name? They had three names, aren't they?
Yeah, I know. Avalon was one of them.
But Ernie Scranton and I.
No wonder you got locked up.
Huh?
No wonder you got locked up.
Ernie Scranton and I were on that boat. We got to cutting up. We'd been drinking a little bit.
See, that thing.
Finally, the captain or somebody come to us and he said, "Come on, boys." We went downstairs. They didn't lock us up, but they told us down there.
Mm-hmm.
And no, they told us stay right here till the boat lands at Aurora, and then you can get off. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you. What was the other name of that
brother? No, I'm sure you're right though, Eddie, about them.
What were you doing on the boat, Eddie? Just for fun, or?
It was an excursion.
Yeah, yeah.
It was strictly an excursion boat.
And a dashboard, everything on there.
It was nice.
Dance floor
in
the bar.
Yeah.
Well, this was before, if I remember right, this was before the bar was open. So we took our own bottle on there. Mm-hmm. We had more than we should have had.
Well,
then
that homebrew went with you.
Homebrew or Mountain Dew, I don't know which.
Did you all live here during the flood?
Right.
Where did you live then? On the river or?
Oh, you mean where I live? Well, I spent most of time.
That was where? Utah, you said?
John Street.
John Street, yeah.
No, I lived on 4th Street.
No, I lived on...
You're speaking of 37th.
Yeah.
I tell you...
For a few days, none of us lived anywhere.
No, you ain't kidding, man. This is terrible.
Where'd you go?
We worked.
You just worked around the clock.
Help this guy move, and they come up here and help this guy move. And when it's come your turn, they help you move, and you go help Ralph move.
Trying to stay ahead of the water.
Easy to get out.
How long did you have warning? When did you know this was coming?
I'll tell you what really happened. We had a next door at Clarence Zernock.
And that's my man who works for me, Ray Pete. And this is the house over there. Well, the house is gone. It's the house that burnt over there on Moore Street just recently.
The water's out past the upstairs windows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now tell me what happened in January.
We went to bed one night, and the water was clear over the bank. You know, we lived right across the street from the river. In other words, then we had to walk across the street, then you went right down the river bank, down to the river. So the river must have been under the bank, I don't know, 10, 15 feet down underneath there, see? But the next morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, here come Clarence Chernoff, our next door neighbor, knocking on the door and said, "Folks, get out of here." He said, "We're about ready to be run over here." Well, glory be, Dart Dad still had his harness rod. And just lucky we got that thing out. You know, there were Dad had brought the car back out of the garage, out on the street, and then we took it up on, we lived on Decatur Street at that time, took it up on John Street put it up every year, between your house up there. Yeah. And then the water got on both tires, quit. Boy, that was lucky. Then everything happened, man. Then everything happened. Here, in other words, heck, by nighttime, the water was down their house.
Did you get your furniture out?
Yes, sir. And you know what happened? My mother, we all put it upstairs in the house. Upstairs. And they got everything up. And Mom looked at Dad. You know, Dad, she said, "I don't like that." Dad says, "You don't think I'm going to take it all back down, do you?" Well, glory be, Mom says, "I don't know." Well, the old dear, I tell you, she went upstairs and grabbed something and took it out and took it up and put it on Haynes' front porch. And they emptied that house, took it all from on Haynes' front porch.
And
it hadn't been for that, they'd lost everything. I mean, well, the house is practically ruined when they got back in their home. I mean, even washed the plaster off the walls. Washed it off. Gone. Porch is gone. Oh, no.
No
flood insurance. No. But those were some days, I tell you, they were. Then they had the... And of course, the what do they call it? That part of the government moved in here. State militia, wasn't it?
Yeah.
National Guard. Yeah, National Guard.
Well, they come down here from someplace up north.
I tell you another thing they needed was at this point now that they needed a hospital. Can you imagine that? But they needed a hospital. And at that time, this Fifth Street Church had just put a new addition onto their. Church. They kind of had a Sunday school room or whatever it might be. Well, anyway, all electricity went out. Didn't have no lights or... Oh, boy. No water, did we? No water, no lights, no nothing. Well, and old Bob Johnson, where I work, he still had a Delco light plant in a demonstrator. In other words, this thing was on in a trailer they pulled behind a car, all in act. In other words, all you had to do is
hook it up,
see? And Begory, old Jesse Laker, he took it up there and hooked on that church up there and provided them with electricity all the time. They had that, and they had a lot of people there. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people there. People get sick and get hurt, and everything happened.
That was a hospital,
right.
Which church was that?
That was the
Fifth Street.
Fifth Street, the village.
Church of Christ.
First Evangelical, no.
First Church of Christ. Huh?
Our church is Church of Christ.
Now, Haynes, where did you live? You lived on 4th Street?
No, I lived on John Street like the rest of them when I was going on.
I tell you another one day I slept in bed with four guys one night, see, four of us in one day in bed, and of all things, I was next to the wall. Well, the next morning, I was practically on the floor. I was hanging over the sheets, you know, I mean, the sheets. Got in between the wall there, I was down between the wall.